Let's start in Iowa. We're less than a week away from the first votes of the 2016 presidential election, and maybe finally some answers as to what trends are real and what aren't.
I think anyone running for president of the United States owes it to the people of Iowa to make the case, to answer the hard questions, to look you in the eyes.
It truly has been about issues. And unfortunately, it seems the other side has been about insults.
Let's see how much money Fox is going to make on the debate without me.
I think we stand a real chance.
Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders is polling dead even with Hillary Clinton in the Hawkeye State, probably. Meanwhile, on the right, the National Review, that bastion of establishment conservatism, devoted an entire issue called Against Trump. Meanwhile, Donald Trump has been in a battle with Ted Cruz to collect evangelical leaders and show who's got the support of the Christian right in Iowa. An average of recent polls has Trump ahead in Iowa and nationally as well. To get an idea of the full implications of the next week, we turn now to Anna Greenberg. She's Democratic strategist and senior vice president at Greenberg Quinlan Rosner Research in Washington. And also Brad Blakeman, a member of George W. Bush's White House from 2001 until 2004, is a senior staffer and now a professor at Georgetown University. Anna and Brad, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. And Brad, I want to start with you with news from the Republican side, and you know where I'm going. Donald Trump says he's out of the Republican debate tomorrow night in Iowa. Now, he said this kind of thing before. His staff says he's definitely out. People say he's afraid of Ted Cruz and doesn't want to get damaged while he has a lead in Iowa. What do you think?
Look, I think this is part of Trump being Trump. He's a spectacle. He tries to be someone who takes the oxygen out of the room. He seems to always be able to get away with his stunts. The question is he too cute for school this time? The fact is, you're less than a week away from the Iowa caucuses. You're on top. Can you ride that wave through the caucus? I don't think you can. And I think people are going to see the fact that he is skipping the debate as chickening out and not facing his competitors, one of which, Ted Cruz, is within points of polling. So I think that's a big mistake by Trump. I think he's gone too far this time, and I don't think they're going to cover his event, his competing event, the way they're going to cover the debates.
Anna Greenberg, there's news on the Democratic side, too. On the one hand, Bernie Sanders is visiting the White House today to meet privately with President Obama, something they don't do too often, even after the president seemed to, not endorse, but give a nod to Hillary Clinton's candidacy the other day in an interview with Politico. But there's a new debate on the Democratic side that's popping up, unsanctioned by the DNC. The debate planning process here, even though this is a little bit maybe for insiders, has been a complete mess.
Sure. There have been complaints, particularly from Bernie Sanders' camp, that there haven't been enough debates, that they've been scheduled on at times on the weekends and at night when nobody will watch. And in fact, I think there's a strong case to be made that the Democrats have tried to limit the number of debates. The thing that's ironic about it is that Hillary Clinton has been fantastic in the debates. And in fact, I think has worn much better relative to Bernie Sanders in those debates. And so the irony of the limiting of the debates, if indeed there it's true that it was in some sense rigged for Hillary Clinton, is that she would have probably benefited from more debates, which I think is why she and Martin O'Malley are both committed to doing this unscheduled debate while Bernie Sanders has not yet committed to participating.
Brad, let's go into Iowa and the fight here between Ted Cruz and Donald Trump and sort of the tallying up of evangelical leaders or spokespeople that they're both kind of fighting for here going into the caucus. Jerry Falwell Jr. surprised a lot of people by coming out for Donald Trump just a day or two ago. Sarah Palin, of course, for Donald Trump. And then Ted Cruz turned right around and said, oh yeah, well, I have Tony Perkins of the Family Research Council. I can go conservative evangelical too. Now, Cruz is supposed to have all of these people, and he's not getting them behind his evangelical candidacy.
No, and it's a battle for the evangelical vote. Look, Ted Cruz is leading with Falwell. Marco Rubio was leading with Billy Graham's. Let's remember, there were 70,000 evangelical voters that showed up in Iowa for the caucuses in the last presidential go-around. That represented over 57% of the total turnout. So this is why it's such a valuable voter base to appeal to. Why? Because they're organized in churches. The organization is there. It's a turnkey operation.
Of course, but Brad, where is the unity here? Now, this can't all be about whether Ted Cruz is a nice guy. The fact that so many of these different parts of the evangelical world are breaking for Donald Trump, who really before a few months ago has professed no particular interest in Christianity or its political values whatsoever. What is this about? Why aren't they going for Cruz?
Well, they're not in lockstep with one another. The whole premise behind caucuses is it's a very raucous, unscripted event. It's not like a New Hampshire, which is the first secret ballot election. You're talking to your neighbors. You're trying to convince them. And by the way, the evangelical caucus, if you will, is as diverse as the churches that they represent. So this is exactly what the process is supposed to do. It's not monolithic. It's open. It's interactive, and that's exactly what the primary system is. Remember,
That's true, but that still doesn't explain why high-powered evangelicals would be interested in the candidacy of Donald Trump, who, as I said, has shown no particular interest in their politics.
Here's why: people like to go with a winner. They like winning, and if they think that somebody's going to win, it's better to have somebody in office who you can deal with than to be locked out. So this is the appeal of Donald Trump. People think that he's a winner.
Well, people do like to win, and there's excitement on the Republican side for Donald Trump. Maybe that explains some of that evangelical support, as Brad says.
Sure.
Anna, let's talk about on the Democratic side and what excitement really means in Iowa. Bernie Sanders' excitement and big rallies and a decent performance in Iowa and perhaps even a win in New Hampshire. I'm speculating, of course. Going away from these first two primaries, how does Bernie Sanders do on Super Tuesday? To a lot of smart analysts, and I realize that their analysis has been largely irrelevant so far this year, does Bernie Sanders go into Super Tuesday and into the South and get trounced after this by Hillary Clinton's machine?
Well, I don't know that he gets trounced by Hillary Clinton's machine, because I'm not sure what kind of on-the-ground operation either campaign has. They've put almost all of their resources into the first two states, and it's not clear how much infrastructure either campaign has going into Super Tuesday. That being said, I think that Bernie Sanders does have a problem with racial minorities, in the sense that Hillary Clinton is very popular with African Americans and Latino voters. So I think that he has a real hard time in the southern states winning because the minority voters are more supportive of Hillary Clinton, regardless of what kind of operation there is on the ground. He's perfectly positioned for those states, particularly New Hampshire, because he is from a neighboring state. His positioning gets much more complicated and difficult when you get outside of those first two states.
So he gets a lot of media coverage. I mean, so much of these early primaries drive how we cover it. So if Sanders does well or wins one, the primary benefit is all the coverage he gets, right?
Sure, but I think that right now the conventional wisdom, if you will, is that Hillary can win Iowa and he wins New Hampshire. And so I think it's a status quo outcome. I will say this, though. He has a great small donor base similar to President Obama, and he'll be able to continue on even if he's not racking up delegates. He can hang on for a while given his donor base.
Brad, the only two people that you and I have talked about on the Republican side are Donald Trump and Ted Cruz. And the position of the party is really anybody but those two guys. Now, the oxygen is getting a little thin in this Republican room for Marco Rubio or Chris Christie or certainly Jeb Bush for the Republican choice of anybody but these two guys. Is the Republican Party going to be stuck with one of two people who they really don't want?
Not at all. We're only talking about Iowa. And if we're talking about Iowa, Iowa historically is not a good predictor as to who is going to be selected by the party or elected by the people. So once we get past Iowa and we move to New Hampshire and then down to South Carolina, Nevada, and Super Tuesday, it's going to open opportunity for Marco Rubio and maybe even John Kasich. Kasich's polling very well in New Hampshire.
And Brad Blakeman, you make a good point. There is no president or nominee Huckabee. There was no president or nominee Rick Santorum either.
Right, exactly. So you have to look at the historical models, but also in this year, I think you also have to be an open mind and understand that this is different than any other cycle we've seen probably in decades, because people are really ticked off on both sides, Republicans and Democrats. They want change, but they want it big time. They want upheaval. And they want a candidate that speaks to the fact that Washington is broken and we got to get stuff done.
Brad Blakeman, a member of President George W. Bush's senior White House staff, now a professor at Georgetown University, and Anna Greenberg, Democratic strategist and senior vice president at Greenberg Quinlan Rosner. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.